This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello to all you irreverent ones this last weekend of July.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. This is July the 27th, 2013. Free Thought Radio is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio also podcasts, and we broadcast in other parts of the country, in stations in California, in New York, in Michigan, in Missouri, and now for the last few weeks in Texas, in Central Texas. So welcome to all you new listeners in the Lone Star State.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF. That stands for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, because we don't think you can have any freedom of religion unless you have the freedom to dissent. And we have, we are breaking 20,000. We may not, every month we have attrition, but we're getting up there, 20,000 members nationwide and some around the world. And also, I think we have members in every province, but we have members in all of the 50 states, plus Puerto Rico, Guam, etc. And we work to keep religion out of government and to represent the views of non-believers. And I do want to give a hip hip hooray shout out to the Blackout secular rally that's going to start in a few hours, taking place at Flushing Meadows Park in Queens, New York. It's a historic rally, the largest outdoor celebration for secularists of color, taking place between 1:30 and 6 today, co-sponsored by groups such as Black Nonbelievers.
Yesterday, July the 26th, was the birthday of George Bernard Shaw, a secularist. He was born in Dublin in 1856. Annie Laurie and I were in Dublin, or as they say, some of them say over there, Dublin. Earlier this month. George Bernard Shaw, when he was 20, he moved over to London, where he began this huge career, distinguished career as a critic, a journalist, a stage director. He was a women's rights advocate. George Bernard Shaw was a religion critic and, of course, most notably, a playwright. He wrote more than 50 plays, including Man and Superman, Caesar and Cleopatra, Major Barbara, and Pygmalion.
And Pygmalion was written and first performed back in 1913. So it's the 100th anniversary of that play.
Now, Shaw was an atheist for most of his life. He got a little mystical later on, but his belief in social equality led him to associate with other free thinkers and nonbelievers, such as Bertrand Russell, Virginia Woolf, Annie Besant. And together with the atheists Graham Wallas and Beatrice and Sidney Webb, Shaw co-founded the London School of Economics in 1895 to promote the betterment of society. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1925 and an Academy Award for Best Screenplay for the film Pygmalion. His work was overtly critical of religion, such as his play Androcles and the Lion, and especially the short story The Adventures of the Black Girl in Search for God. While Shaw claimed that he was an atheist since the age of 10, later, he sort of classified himself as a mystic, but he remained critical of organized religion, especially of the Christian church. He said, "There's nothing in religion but fiction. And it's not disbelief that's dangerous to society, it's belief." At the end of his long life, he requested, quote, "the form of a cross or any other instrument of torture or symbol of blood sacrifice be omitted from all memorials to him." You can find out more about Shaw and many other freethinkers at FFRF's webpage called Free Thought of the Day at FFRF.org/news/day.
So we could call Shaw definitely an honorary freethinker, and Pygmalion was the play, of course, upon which the musical My Fair Lady was based. And Dan, who wrote My Fair Lady?
My Fair Lady, that was Lerner and Lowe, Alan J. Lerner and Frederick Lowe.
And were they free thinkers?
Well, I think they were. I read some books about both of them. I think we can count J. Lerner and Fritz Lowe as honorary free thinkers. They both lived as non-theists. They never expressed theistic views, although I can't find any overt free thought quotes they said. And Lerner once did allow for the possibility of the paranormal when he was working on a clear day. On a clear day, you can see forever, you know, which is about ESP. And Lowe once refused to buy a house because someone told him it was haunted. But they really didn't seem to have or express any God beliefs at all during their lives.
Well, nobody's perfect. And they did write some perfectly lovely music based on a play written by a freethinker. And now we forgot to say that we have a guest today coming in studio, which is always fun. And on the second half of Free Thought Radio, we'll be meeting philosopher and author Larry Shapiro. And he is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And he's been teaching a very interesting seminar this summer, which is called The Greatest Debate, Science and Religion. So we'll look forward to that. And then, Dan, I think I heard that my mother told you a good joke the other day.
She called on the phone and said, Dan, I have a joke for you. Your mother, Ann Nickel Gaylor, who's one of the co-founders of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
Principal founder.
She said, she told me a joke. There's this little boy out in the schoolyard. All the kids are playing and having fun, but little Billy is standing by himself by the fence. And so the teacher goes over and said, Billy, you look so sad. What's wrong? And Billy said, my dog died yesterday. And the teacher said, well, Billy, don't be so sad. Your dog is in heaven, and someday you're going to see your dog again. And Billy gave her this skeptical look and said, what does God want with a dead dog?
That's pretty cute. So she got that out of a book, right?
I don't know where she got
it. She's always reading.
But when
large print books now.
Anne doesn't tell many jokes, but when she does, they're good ones.
They are good. Okay, so now we have some news, interesting news. If you are still persuaded that atheists are bound to be bad people, a survey reveals that only 0.2%, that would be...
You didn't read that right. 0.02%,
which is...
Two hundredths of a percent
of federal prisoners identify as atheists. And the U.S. Federal Bureau of Prisons released an April 2013 survey recently of 218,000 prisoners, reporting that 0.02% of prisoners are atheists. And I said that right. That's not 2% or even 0.2%. That's 0.02%.
Well, you know, that's much less than 1 in 1,000. That's actually 1 in 5,000 federal prisoners.
And friendly atheist blogger Hemet Mehta, who, by the way, came to Madison this week to interview my mother and Nickel Gaylor for a profile he's going to be doing and visited our staff, and that was fun. He first reported the statistic on his very popular blog, The Friendly Atheist, and you can check out his blog post. And he had wanted to corroborate a statistic that was getting dated, which actually was from my FOIA request many years ago.
Like 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Something like that. And good for him for getting the new information. He made an open records request to the U.S. Federal Bureau of Prisons, which I had done many years ago, and he got this even smaller percentage of Americans.
Well, your percentage was 0.7, right?
I think so. I got to look that one up. But anyway, it's 0.02%. And it does go a long way, as Hemet points out, in debunking the myth that people without God are somehow bad people. And so
that means that 99.98% of the U.S. federal prisoners who are committing crimes are not atheists. They are people who believe in God. What is it about Ivory Soap? Ivory Soap is only 99.44% pure. So talking about crimes committed by people who believe in God, Annie Laura, you just wrote a blog about George Zimmerman.
Well, last Friday, I think, you know, I didn't know that Obama was going to be making a statement. I think all of us felt like, you know, we have to speak out. And it was what put me over the edge was Florida Governor Rick Scott, who called a day of prayer for Sunday, last Sunday. And this is the response to his office being occupied by young African-Americans looking for justice. And that was his response.
In the Trayvon Martin case.
Yeah, in the Trayvon Martin case. And in my blog, I pointed out that George Zimmerman, who, of course, was let off completely, had told Sean Hannity of Fox News last summer that his killing of Trayvon Martin was part of, quote unquote, God's plan. Hmm. And so this idea of a governor thinking you can get, you're doing something, or you can somehow placate people who are so distressed, who African-American parents who are afraid for their children. They're afraid for their children to go outside wearing hoodies, or that they're going to be misconstrued, you know, and the firearm issue. This is such a inadequate red herring.
So guns and God. It's God's guns plan God. For people to carry guns.
You know, people want justice. And that's, they deserve justice, and African-Americans deserve justice. And evidence of the growing number of African-Americans who are making known their dissent from religion, they're not all going to be placated by a governor appealing to a God, is this blackout rally taking place today, where the largest rally of secular people of color in the United States coming together. So I told Governor Scott, your day of prayer is nothing but hooey.
So stay tuned. We're going to take a short break here, and you'll hear a little bit of Lerner and Lowe's music. And then after the break, we're going to speak with philosophy professor Larry Shapiro, who has written some books about the mind and consciousness and cognition. But he's also teaching a summer course about religion, God, and society. Very fascinating topic. The students love him. Philosopher Larry Shapiro will join us on the second half of Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And I was talking about Nothing Fails Like Government Prayer. What a pitiful response it was for Florida Governor Scott to declare a day of prayer for unity. About George Zimmerman getting off for killing Trayvon Martin. And Dan, this week, this whole issue came up again with, and you wrote a blog about it.
Well, I was
the issue of government prayer.
I was looking at FFRF in the news, and there's a lot of religious websites that go after us, and they complain about our complaint on state church separation. And many of them make this argument that we had government prayer from the very beginning, which is a part of America. So the blog I wrote said, "Nothing fails like government prayer. Ask and ye shall not receive." Some conservative Christians like to point out that although there was no prayer during the Constitutional Convention of 1787, there was indeed formal Christian prayer spoken 13 years earlier during the Continental Congress in 1774. Many believers point to that earlier prayer as evidence that the United States was founded as a Christian nation. But remember, this was before the First Amendment, before the Revolutionary War, and before our country as we know it even existed. There was no prohibition of laws respecting the establishment of religion. There were no U.S. laws at all. The Constitutional Congress was not...
The Continental Congress?
Oh, I said it wrong. The Continental Congress was not the formation of the United States of America. That was a botched first attempt to form a confederation which turned out to be too loose and too weak to be called a nation. The results of that 1774 Congress, which was blessed by our Heavenly Father, high and mighty King of Kings, were not only wholly inadequate, but they were an abject failure. The prayer delivered by the Episcopal Reverend Jacob Duché asked the Lord of Lords to, and this is a quote, "defeat the malicious designs of our cruel adversaries and constrain them to drop the weapons of war from their unnerved hands in the day of battle." In other words, they prayed, "God, don't let there be a war." The King of Kings was supposed to supernaturally stop the king's army from even firing a shot. Well, it didn't work out that way, as we all know. As many as 50,000 fighters from both sides were killed in battle during the Revolutionary War. They were wounded or died in prison. That's about 1 in 20 military-age males who lost their lives. Today, that would represent millions of lives. Why didn't this high and mighty Lord answer the prayer and cause those cruel British to drop their weapons? The history of governmental prayer offers us an often too bloody object lesson of the truth. Ask and ye shall not receive. I should point out that FFRF attorney Andrew Seidel reminded me that, true to the flexibility of religious thinking and principles, that Reverend Duché, who offered that prayer in 1774, abandoned his fellow colonials in their fight for independence, and he defected to the British, to the cruel British. He was convicted of treason against Pennsylvania, and he decamped to the warm bosom of his king. He was not one of the brighter stars of our founding history.
So, another reason why government prayer fails dismally. And now we are coming up, we're going to talk with philosopher Lawrence Shapiro. But we want to hear some philosophy from Yip Harburg, our favorite lyricist, who said, "Life is short, short brother, and there is no other." We haven't played his song, Ain't It the Truth, for a long time, and I had a hankering to hear it and asked Dan to cue it up. This is Lena Horne's version. Yip Harburg is an atheist. He's the guy who wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and we work with the Yip Harburg Foundation to we've reprinted his rhymes for the Irreverent that you can get at ffref.org. Now here's Lena Horne.
Life is short, short, brother. Ain't it the truth? And there is no other. Ain't it the truth? You got to rock that rainbow while you still got your youth. Ain't it the solid truth? Was a guy named Adam. Ain't it the truth? Said now, look here, madam. Ain't it the truth? You got to bite that apple while you still got your tooth. Ain't it the mellow truth? Lord gave us wine and gin to drown our troubles in. What's all this talk of sin? Rise and shine and fall in line. Get that new religion. Ain't it the truth? For you is dead pigeon. Ain't it the truth? 'Cause when you laid horizontal in that telephone booth, there'll be no breathing spell. It's only natural. Ain't it the gospel truth? Life is short, short, brother. Ain't it the truth? And there is no other. Ain't it the truth? So if you don't love living, then you're slightly uncouth. Ain't it the dignified truth? Said that gal to Barry, ain't it the truth? Love is cash and carry. Ain't it the truth? You got to shake it down or mix it up with vermouth. Ooh, ain't it the visible, visible truth? Life is a rippling brook. Man is a fish to cook. You got to bait your hook. Rise and shine and cast your line. You got to get your possum. Ain't it the truth? While you're still in blossom, ain't it the truth? That went for delight. Sinatra and Ruth. Them babes did mighty swell. They rang that Jezebel. The truth.
And that's Lena Horne. That's Lena Horne singing Ain't It the Gospel Truth, written by Harold Arlen and Yip Harburg. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. We'll be talking with philosopher Lawrence Shapiro.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we have in the studio with us today, Larry Shapiro, or I should say, Professor Lawrence Shapiro. He's a philosopher. He's a professor in the Department of Philosophy right here at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, where he's spent his entire career, the last 20 years, since he moved to Wisconsin from Philadelphia. He's written widely on topics in philosophy of mind, philosophy of psychology, cognitive science, and he's published a number of books. One of them is called The Mind Incarnate, which was MIT, a book called Arguing About the Mind, which I think he edited it with Bree Gertler, Routledge, in 2007. And his most recent book, I think, is called Embodied Cognition, which, if we had time, I'd like to talk about that a little bit, if we do, which came out in 2011. He's also a dedicated runner. He's the author of a book called Zen and the Art of Running, The Path to Making Peace with Your Pace. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Larry.
Thanks for having me here.
So I might have seen you running around Madison because we walk a lot through town and we live kind of in the same area. Where do you run usually?
I run all over the place. I run through the Arboretum. I run along the bike path toward Allied Drive. I run through the center of town.
So you probably run by our house because our house is right on the bike path.
I'm sure I do, yeah.
Are you a marathoner?
I've run a number of marathons, but I've slowed down in the last couple of years.
So do you find enlightenment while you're running?
No, I wouldn't say that. I don't know that I've ever found enlightenment, but I do enjoy running and letting my mind wander as I run.
Now, you taught this summer, I think the seminar is over, a seminar called The Greatest Debate, Science and Religion, and that definitely caught our eye.
Well, we'd heard about it from Steve Salemson,
who's one of our volunteers. He's the retired administrator of the University of Wisconsin Press.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, did he audit your class?
He must have audited it. The class was open to the public. It's a specially designated class that the public is allowed to take for free. And I had about 120 members of the, not just Madison public, some people came as far as Spring Green to listen to me talk about this stuff.
Is this the first time you've done this seminar?
It is, but I'd like to turn it into a more regular course because of all the interest that it generated.
Well, so I understand that you are a non-believer.
I am a non-believer,
and,
yes.
The students make comments. They say, we know he's a non-believer, but we love him. All the students are really thumbs up on your teaching style. They just love the way you present. Even the believers say it's a fun class.
Well, I try to be respectful of believers' beliefs, despite the fact that I myself don't think that they're all justified in believing what they do. But that's no reason to be disrespectful.
But so you come clean and you let people know what your personal views are, sort of as a context?
I haven't
context
done that, or, but it's not hard to figure out, I think. I should say that I just finished a manuscript called Wonder of Wonders, A Common Sense Guide to Miracles, in which it's a book, and I argue that beliefs in miracles have never been justified.
Well, a cute title, too.
And you're looking for a publisher then.
I'm looking for a publisher. If there are any agents out there who want to represent me, I'd love to hear from
them. Well, how about if I pray for a miracle that one of the publishers would supernaturally be interested? Would that fit?
Well, there are studies done that show that there's no efficacy of prayer. So I wouldn't be confident that
that's
would
not
find
very
me
much help.
Right.
So what do you talk about in the class?
We talked about several issues. I spent some time talking about justification and what makes a belief about God or about miracles justified, and various reasons one might have to believe something. Belief doesn't have to come about just through justification. There might be other reasons to hold beliefs. We talked about specific topics. The topic that I'm recently most interested in is miracles, belief in miracles. But we also talked about the possibility of morality without a God. We talked about free will and how to make sense of the possibility of free will if God exists or if God does not exist and the world is materialistic and deterministic. And I had some guest speakers on board. So Elliot Sober, who's a philosopher of science here at Madison, talked about some arguments for God's existence, like the design argument and the fine-tuning argument. And Steve Paulson came on the show and provided us with nice clips from his interviews with people like Dan Dennett and Richard Dawkins.
He's the public radio host.
Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right.
Wow. That must have been interesting.
That was a lot of fun, yeah.
We think we saw a miracle earlier this month in Ireland, a Virgin Mary statue in a grotto, and she moves. Mm-hmm. Of course, she didn't move when we were looking at her, but 20,000 people came to see this statue. So how do you explain that?
How do I explain that people came to see it or that they think that it moved? Well, so as I understand miracles, they involve two sorts of components. One is that they have to have a supernatural origin. So without a supernatural origin, there's no reason to call something a miracle. So the miracle on ice, not a miracle in my book. The miracle of birth, not a miracle. Mm-hmm. It's got a natural origin, one that many of us are quite familiar with. So that's one component. It has to have a supernatural origin. The other component is that it has to be very improbable. So just imagine your reaction if you were to hear that the sun rising every day had a supernatural origin. I think because it happens every single day, day after day, we tend to think, no, there's nothing very special about the sun rising. So when you put together the idea that miracles are extremely improbable events with supernatural origins, it's pretty easy to argue that that statue that in Ireland, that statue of Mary, was it? Probably its motion, if it did move at all, was not miraculous.
But people said they saw her move. Her body shifted. It's a statue. They said that. They reported it. That's evidence.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's now think about how we can...
You're being the devil's advocate here.
Analyze this. No, I'm sure Dan believes in it. Let's now analyze the event from the perspective of those two components I talked about. First of all, does it have a supernatural origin? Let's assume that it really did move, okay? It's one thing. How do we know that it would have a supernatural origin? What you require is a kind of inference that philosophers label inference to the best explanation. The idea is a simple one. If you see some phenomenon, but not its cause, what you have to do is try to explain that phenomenon, and you do this by entertaining ideas of various causes. So scientists use this inference all the time when they're trying to argue for the existence of unobservables like electrons or germs. They collect a bunch of evidence and they say, you know, the best way to explain this is to think that there must be a germ even though we can't see it, or there must be an electron. When I get up in the morning and see the newspaper on my front stoop, I didn't see who delivered it, but I infer that a newspaper delivery person must have been by. That explains it. But how do we make that inference in the case of the statue to a supernatural cause? Let's suppose that the statue really did move. Now, what might have caused it? It might have been God. It might have been the spirit of Mary. It might have been natural causes of which
the wind
were unfamiliar.
An earthquake.
Earthquake. Maybe extraterrestrials enjoy moving statues of Mary now and then. Now, the evidence we have, the motion of the statue, is as well explained by any of those things as it would be by a supernatural thing.
And actually, the Irish, our Irish atheist host, was pointing out, people would just sit there for hours and hours and gaze. And after a while,
drinking Irish whiskey,
right?
Or too many pints of Guinness. Maybe.
You know, if you look at something long enough, you might think it's moving. You know?
Right.
Well, if you just
sure.
If you close one eye and then switch back and forth, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
See, you're moving right now.
Yeah, I am. If I get too far away, that's not going to work, though. But then the other component, the improbability, makes us wonder whether there's some better explanation for this motion. As you were just noting, people have been sitting there forever.
And they're proselytized, tired. And they want a miracle.
Right. So,
they're fanatics.
Yeah. So David Hume made this nice argument. He said we have to weigh two different considerations. One, the unlikelihood that the statue really moved. I mean, that's really unlikely. And then we have to ask ourselves about the probability that people would have said it moved if it hadn't. Because that's kind of strange, too. Why would people be wrong about something? But as Hume pointed out, we'd have to think that the falsity of the testimony is more miraculous than the purported event itself. And in this case, it seems like there are lots of ways to explain why it is people reported seeing the statue move that doesn't require us to think that there was some supernatural
It happens
miracle.
All the time, you know.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, and, you know, when we hear the claims of other religions, you know, did Joseph Smith really find the gold tablets, you know? So we're skeptical about all of that. Well, I hear some music playing. Is this Lerner and Lowe?
Oh, wow, this interview went fast. We still got to learn more about the seminar.
Sure.
So we're going to take a break here. We're speaking with Larry Shapiro, professor of philosophy at the University of Wisconsin, about a class he's been teaching about science and religion. And we'll talk some more about miracles and maybe free will and embodied cognition, if that's what you call it. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're continuing to talk with Lauren Shapiro, who is a local University of Wisconsin professor of philosophy. And we were looking at your bio before you came on the show, Larry, and we noticed that you had children who had proper names for a philosopher.
Yes,
Sophia and Thalia. Mm-hmm. So I assumed you had something to do with naming them that. And then when we were talking later, I found out something different.
That's right. The names actually are Greek names, and they're Greek names because my wife is Greek. Her name is Athena. She's the only goddess I worship and am completely devoted to.
And I asked you, is she a godless goddess?
She is a godless goddess, although don't tell her mother that.
And she's from her family's from Greece, or is she?
She is from Greece. She's from an island called Kos, which is on the Turkish coast, just north of Rhodes.
Well, that's pretty cool. And she's an attorney.
And she's an attorney. Yeah.
Yeah.
So wisdom and Thalia is one of the graces, right?
Thalia was a muse, muse of humor and poetry.
So, do you call them Sophia and Thalia, or you have nicknames?
I have lots of nicknames. Thalia has become Wally for one reason or another. And
probably what she called herself.
Sophia is the loafer.
Oh. Well, okay. So we're sorry we missed your seminar that was just over this summer seminar, The Greatest Debate, Science and Religion. And we talked about miracles because you've got a new book coming out on that, which sounds fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But what about morality? Is God necessary for morality? Was that a big part of your seminar?
We did spend a couple of hours talking about that issue because, as you know, there are a number of theists, Christian apologists, perhaps Norman Geisler is the best known, who've argued in very various public fora that without God, you can't make sense of the idea of goodness. No good without God. And this is an idea that Plato refuted several thousand years ago. I don't know why evangelicals haven't read their Plato and studied their Plato, but Plato made a very simple argument. It comes out of Socrates' mouth, of course, like all of Plato's dialogues do. And Socrates is on his way to the courthouse where he's going to be tried for corrupting the youth, and runs into Euthyphro, who is one of these people that Socrates loved to carve down in size. And he gets in a conversation with Euthyphro, who basically tells Socrates he knows how to identify the right actions, the good actions. They're simply the actions that God loves. And Socrates then asks this very pointed question: is an action good because the gods love it, or do the gods love it because it's good? And obviously, it's the second thing that must be true. If the first were true, if actions are good simply because God loves them, then what counts as good would be completely arbitrary. Rape could be good if God chose to love rape.
Well, the Bible even said things like that. Genocide and rape and that were actually commands of God.
Yes, in Leviticus you do find lots of scary claims like that. But Socrates' point was that what's good must be independent of God's will, and God is simply good at recognizing the good things. But this means that good is independent of God, and so we don't need God's existence for truth, moral claims to be true or false.
But, you know, tell that to the fundamentalists. They, as you said, they just don't get it. And this, I'd say this is one of the biggest problems that the free thought movement has in terms of public relations.
Yes.
You're a bad person. You can't be good because you don't believe in my God.
Yeah. They obviously haven't thought carefully about
these
questions.
Well, I used to be one of those preachers. And in my mind, I might have even granted your point. Okay, God is recognizing what's good, but we need to believe because we need the carrot and the stick. We need some motivation. We need to be afraid of hell. We need to be afraid of his judgment. Regardless of where morality comes from, we still need God to be the imperative force behind it.
Yeah, well, that's obviously not true because I have no trouble being a good person. I think I'm a good person, and I don't. It's why shouldn't concern for one's fellow human beings be enough to motivate you to be a good person? Yeah. Why do you need someone threatening you with punishment?
Or rewarding you. Exactly.
It makes right and wrong really kinds of selfish activities.
Yeah, to avoid punishment. I'm going to be nice to you, not because I care about you, Larry, but because I don't want to get my butt kicked in hell someday, right? So
right, and you find far fewer atheists and theists in jail, so I wonder.
Well, we just talked about that before you came on, so you've read our minds. I don't know how much. I don't know if we have time to go into free will. We've only got 3 minutes.
Okay.
What could you do with free will in 3 minutes?
Well, I can tell you this. Lots of people think you need to believe in God for there to be free will, but this raises questions of its own, because let's suppose that God is omniscient, as he's supposed to be. He knows everything that's going to happen. So when I'm standing in Babcock Hall wondering what flavor ice cream to order, apparently God knows what flavor I'll order. If he didn't know it, he wouldn't be omniscient. But if he knows what flavor I'm about to choose, then how can my choice be free? I can't possibly choose something that God didn't already know would happen. And so it looks like it's not determinism that makes a free will a hard concept to understand, but it's God's existence. So the theist has a puzzle on his or her hands to explain how their choices can be free, given that God knows what they'll choose.
Well, even worse than that, think about God applying that logic to his own future actions. If he knows what he's going to do tomorrow at noon, what freedom does he even have? He can't be omnipotent if he can't change his mind.
How can you choose your ice cream until you know what the selection is?
Yeah.
Which is a very nice dilemma.
That's great ice cream, by the way. We walk by there, too. It's some of the best in the world.
Now, what kind of response, and we don't have much time left, but what kind of response did you have in the seminar? Was there questions and answers, or how did you get reaction with the students?
Students would ask questions toward the end of lecture. I would open things up for questions. And I was surprised by the number of students who actually were atheist or agnostic. Part of that is of course, the Madison effect, right? We live in this little bubble of a free-thinking community. So I wasn't, I guess, too surprised. But I thought there would be more people sticking up for the theist side of things.
Hmm. So, well, that's a good sign.
I think so, yeah.
And, you know, Dawkins says that, too.
Well, just like in Northern Europe.
In his lectures, yeah.
Yeah, but even coming to this country.
So, So very briefly, I mean, we're out of time now. Our engineer is signaling us. But Jerry Coyne and Vic Stenger say on the question, are science and religion compatible? They say no. Can you say yes or no briefly? Are they compatible?
Well, there's certainly claims coming from a religion that are empirical in nature. And when they conflict with science, they're not compatible. But there are lots of other issues about which neither science nor religion has sort of the authority to speak, I think. Ethics is one of these questions. We can explain why people have ethical beliefs as they do, but science can't tell us what it's right to believe or wrong to believe.
So it's not that
which actions are right or wrong.
Not that they're compatible or incompatible. It's just irrelevant to the question. Then.
Yeah, there are certain subject matters that neither of them touch.
Well, we're looking forward to the new book on miracles.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Wonder of Wonders, A Common Sense Guide to Miracles, and I'm hoping to find an agent or a publisher.
Well, we hope so, too, soon. Thank you so much for coming in person to our studio for Free Thought Radio.
It's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks.
We've been talking with Professor Lawrence Shapiro, Philosophy Department at the University of Wisconsin. Thank you, and thank you, Dave McCann, for producing the show. Our announcer is Buzz Kemper. Listen to our podcast or archives. Go to ffrf.org/news/radio.
Ask for more information at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. We have the August paper coming out with all of the winning essays. Our high school seniors going into college in the fall. Very intelligent kids. And learn more at 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday.